Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's a great pleasure to welcome to today's program Carlos Godinez, Intermodal Director, Mexico for Transplace Celtic International. And today we're going to talk about growth and improvements in Mexico's rail network. When we talk about Mexico, a lot of the focus historically has been on kind of cross-border shipments, truck-based shipments, but certainly there's a lot going on the rail side as well, and leading shippers and those that are involved with trade with Mexico are incorporating rail as part of the transportation strategy and networks. And I'm very fortunate to have with us today Carlos, who will share his perspective on what's happening on the ground there in Mexico with regards to rail. I just want to remind you that if you are joining us live today, part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this interactive. So if you've got any questions for Carlos as we're having our conversation here, you can do so via the submit a question button or the chat feature, and I'll keep an eye on it. And if there's a good and appropriate question, I'll certainly weave it into the conversation. So with that, Carlos, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Adrian, for the invitation. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Great. You know, before we kind of dive into this topic, you know, whenever I have a new guest on the program, I always like to find out, you know, their career path and how they got involved with this industry. So why don't we start there? You know, why don't you briefly tell us a little bit about your career path, how and why you got involved with supply chain logistics, and what your current role and responsibilities are there at Transplace?
Perfect. Yeah. So I started my career 20 years ago. I just started from this side of the table, from the supplier side, starting my career doing sales and commercial work in one of the leading Mexican logistics companies called TMM. That company used to have, you know, the international containers, vessels, terminals. And it was one of the predecessors of the rail movement in Mexico. So TFM was actually the partner with KCS back in those times in the late 90s that get engaged in the concession of the rail Mexican system. So that's when I started my connection with the rail system in Mexico. So I stayed there in TMM for 2.5 years. Then moving to the other side of the table with Procter and Gamble, doing the commercial purchases of transportation and logistics. So starting, you know, a new department there in Mexico City, basically working for the inbound logistics for all the facilities and the new plants for PNG in Mexico. So basically 6 to 7 plants, and then you know, start escalating and getting support to the other line of businesses and outbound logistics and domestic transportation in Mexico for PNG. And my latest assignment there was being responsible for Latin America as well. So all the purchasing group doing transportation logistics in South America and Central America were also reporting to me. So that was quite an experience, you know, being in the other side, in the shipper. You know, to understand their needs and how to execute as well the intermodal program. At that time, PNG didn't have any relationship with rail. Actually, when we presented the project, you know, the logistics director in Mexico was like, "Hey, are you crazy? My commodities or my products will never be moved on train or intermodal." So it was kind of an experience at that time. So it was kind of a revolution, no, within PNG. So it was a very good experience, and that's when I started getting involved with this intermodal world. That was in the 2000 to 2005. And then I get invitation to participate in Schneider National Carriers. Back in that time, Schneider was a predominant trucking company in Mexico doing cross-border transportation. We did have some operation for intermodal. It was in piggybacks, you know, the 53 trailers moving on the train. 95% of those moves were offloading the trailers in Laredo and then moving the trailer or the commodities in truck. So a customer in Monterrey or in Guadalajara, probably many times they didn't figure out that their cargo were moving in Canada and the US in rail, and then we're making the delivery by truck using a Mexican trade partner carrier. So after a couple of years, Schneider get engaged with the purchasing of a lot of containers, 53 footers, and I was responsible for opening that operation in Mexico for Schneider and positioning that company as, you know, as one of the premier intermodal companies and one of the first asset carriers in the country. And lastly, in the last 6 months, you know, I had the opportunity to join now Transplace, a very fast growth company in Mexico with you know, young company in the marketplace, 15 years of being in the industry, no more than 7 in the country, but with very fast growth, very energetic environment, and very excited about this new product and new you know, project that we're trying to get it started in Mexico. So has been you know, couple of years that we get into the intermodal world through the acquisition of Celtic. That was in the late 2012, and it was just until last year that Celtic turned their eyes for doing some Mexico intermodal. So right now we have presence in most of the ramps in country and trying to help our customers in Transplace and other customers that can get the benefits of intermodal.
Great, great background experience there, you know, both on the provider side as well as the shipper side. So certainly you bring a lot of experience to the table in terms of what's happening there on the ground in Mexico. So let's kind of, I guess as a way to start, you know, maybe providing an overview of what is the current state of Mexico's rail capabilities and how has it evolved over the years, particularly since you know, started working at the, were working at PNG. What's changed since that time?
Yeah, you know, it has been so I had experience doing business with the general cargo side of the business with the railroads and also the intermodal ones. Definitely has been, you know, a 180 degrees change. You know, in the past 17 years since the concession happened in Mexico in 97, there has been millionaire investments done by the Mexican and the US railroads. So you know, in Mexico, sometimes it's difficult to get some figures, but it is calculated that the investment put in place by the railroads has been close to the $5 billion since the concession happened in '97. So as you know, it was first TFM and KCS getting involved, getting the concession for all the Northeast train connecting Laredo, Brownsville, and the center of Mexico. Then it was Ferromex in conjunction with the Union Pacific, getting the concession for the northwest part of Mexico, and then lately the acquisition of Ferrosur to connect the south. So certainly there has been changes in terms of not only the infrastructure, the service, the train speed, the security, and the capabilities of, you know, how many trains and how many tons or cars a train can hold in Mexico, but also in the marketplace. So we started with 4 rail companies in Mexico. Now we have only 2 predominant companies, which is Ferromex and KCSM, and these 2 guys are the ones, you know, trying to put all the new services in place. So I can say that the you know, in the past, an intermodal move, you know, you put on the train in the U.S., let's say in Chicago, those trains in the past used to stop at the border. So just imagine a train hauling, you know, anywhere between 100 to 250 containers or piggybacks. Each of those containers represent an importer, a different importer, a different broker. So you need to have all these parties in coordination to have that pedimento or that entry form completed for every one of those containers. And that represented huge inefficiencies for, you know, an intermodal move. The years happened, and there was significant improvements in the process. So today, those trains are documented all the way from the origin ramp, let's say Chicago, Canada, the Northeast, Atlanta, Los Angeles, and those trains are coming inbound and pre-cleared and pre-dispatched. So that process made a significant change in the service and the capabilities of the intermodal service. So now the trains do not stop at the border. That really elevates everything that happened in Laredo, which is kind of the Bermuda Triangle, no? So with that, We are really expanding the transit times. So trains are just coming through Laredo. They are connecting with either Ferromex or KSSM. It's a couple of hours for that connection. And then we're delivering in 1 or 2 days, going into the interior ramps in the country. So significant changes from a transit time perspective and the number of service and the ramp options we have now available in the country. In the past, you know, we have the Pantaco ramp in Mexico City. Now in the Mexico City Valley, we do have at least 3 ramps that can cover that market. In the past, in Monterrey market, we just have one option, KCS. Now we have 2 options, Ferromex and KSSM, with a very competitive service, both of them. So again, and I think that this trend will continue. No, there are significant opportunities still out there with the recent announcements of these auto companies being established in Mexico, the Asian companies, IKEA also in Monterrey. There will certainly be new investments happening and potentially new services and new ramps that are going to be available to the shipping community here in the country.
No, a lot of obviously a lot of changes there have taken place. Some great examples you provided there. You know, you mentioned kind of the level of investment that has taken place, you know, over the past, you know, almost 20 years now. Can you give some examples of what kind of investments the company has made? I mean, the country has made in kind of to improve its rail infrastructure and capabilities. And if you could talk just a little bit louder so that the mic can pick you up, that'd be great.
Okay, sure. So I have some figures here that actually last year there were certain studies conducted by the OECDE, you know, the Economic World Forum. So this was because there were some changes proposed on the legislation or the regulatory environment for railroads in Mexico. So that analysis resulted with a very interesting information. So today, for example, both of them, the KCSM and Ferromex, are as competitive in terms of the cost per ton and per kilometer than any other class one railroad may have in the US or Canada. So all those investments that are predominantly in the increased capacity in terms of, you know, how many tons can a rail unit can haul. So basically, there has been not necessarily more mileage to put on the track system in Mexico, but we are making more efficient what we have. So investments in terms of increasing, again, the capacity of each of those track mileage that we have in the country, new ramps, more equipment in those ramps, and especially the technology that is put in place for, you know, the monitoring of those rail cars. There's no what is called the hot boxes. Those hot boxes determine the temperature of the wheels and the brakes, so they can predict if you know, a car is getting to a point to receive a preventive maintenance, something that probably we couldn't know in the past. So that really prevents, you know, accidents or derailments. So I will say that the other big investment has been on the systems to make sure that load is traceable, that we know where it is, and we can notify to the beneficial owner the status and the potential ETA for that shipment.
Yeah, no, you know, great example there. So it sounds like, you know, kind of investments to improve kind of the productivity and the efficiency of the network that you already have. And then obviously on the technology side, as you just mentioned there, to, you know, overall from a visibility standpoint and really make the process as smooth as possible. You know, whenever you talk about rail, you know, service levels is always comes up. You know, it's always part of the conversation here in the United States when you talk about rail. So just kind of curious, you know, what how did the service levels and security, which is another kind of topic that, you know, is top of mind for a lot of shippers. I mean, how do those things compare in Mexico versus, let's say, here in the United States?
From a service level perspective, well, again, I think that we need to differentiate between a regular general cargo train and the intermodal trains. For example, in the case of the new service between Ferromex and the Union Pacific to connect the Chicago and the Midwest market, you can see that in the train schedules and the accuracy of those transit times. So we're really making, you know, very close to the 95% on time. So those trains are, you know, respecting the cutoff time, making the 5 days on the ramp-to-ramp transit. There are certainly, you know, depending on the season, there have been some investments that are also with intention to keep improving this network. In this time, for example, I know that KCSM is conducting some investments in their Laredo and Nuevo Laredo yards. You know, it's normal, you know, we just have one track at this time. So those kind of amendments in the future will result in the benefit of faster transits, but at this time that is posing some impact on the current transits. So it can go between 24 to 48 hours delays right now on the KCSM network, but they will come back. It's just a couple of months to get those investments to be completed, those maintenance works to be completed to get back to the original transit time. So very similar from a transit and service performance levels. We cannot say that necessarily from a general cargo. You know, those trains have a different speed or a different priority on the trains, but definitely from an intermodal perspective, we're seeing, you know, more than 90% on-time performance. Security is certainly a concern and it's still a challenge in Mexico in both sides, I will say. So both the U.S. railroads and the Mexican railroads, they really cooperate together, not because, you know, you can solve the problem in one side and then you have an issue in the other side. So certainly there needs to be collaboration and a lot of communication from, you know, getting the intelligence of, you know, what is happening and what are the regions. So as you know, violence or security, they normally try to move around. So probably you can attack one market and then those guys move into another region. So this is a constant topic and a priority, especially in certain areas like Michoacán and some others. In the case of the intermodal trains, the good news is that those trains. Oh, hello.
Hi, Carlos, are you back?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Carlos, but I cannot see you.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with my camera. Should I go on?
Let me see. Let me invite you back on camera. So I think that we're having a little bit of technical difficulty here. So let me go ahead and see if I can bring invite him back on camera and continue this segment of the conversation. So let me go ahead. This is one of the beauties of doing live episodes. Sometimes you do encounter, you know, some of these technical difficulties, but certainly hopefully we'll be able to get Carlos back on here momentarily and continue the conversation. You know, as we wait for Carlos to, you know, to get on, you know, certainly I think this is an area that I'm hearing more and more from shippers that are interested in kind of expanding their, you know, operations in Mexico, you know, kind of looking at it from a more holistic perspective, right? So like I said in my opening remarks, you know, a lot of shippers today that might be involved in Mexico might be involved purely from a trucking standpoint. And we all know some of the challenges, and whether it's capacity or the delays at the border crossing, so on and so forth. So the leading shippers that I'm looking at are really looking at kind of a multimodal strategy when it comes to Mexico, and rail and intermodal, as we've been talking about so far, is certainly something that's on the map, you know, for a growing number of shippers that are either already operating in Mexico or looking to start their operations there. You know, it looks like I'm still having a little bit of difficulty bringing Carlos on here. Let me see if this will work. Carlos, can you see or hear us?
I can see you.
I can't see you though. It seems like your connection is very low. unfortunately. Let me try one more time, and you know, if this doesn't work out, then we'll have to then continue our conversation, you know, some other time. So let me go ahead and try this one more time and see if we can get Carlos back on the air here. Let me try this again. Okay, I think I see the preview now. So let me go ahead and put him on the air. Hi, Carlos, can you see and hear us now?
Yes, I can see you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yep, and I can see you. It shows your connection is low, but hopefully it'll work out. So yeah, just to I guess to pick up on kind of what you were saying before. Let's just jump right to, you know, maybe you sharing some examples of how companies are kind of leveraging rail as part of their transportation network and strategy in Mexico. Can you share some examples of how companies are really taking that broader intermodal perspective?
Yeah, certainly the predominant users in the past 20 years for intermodal in Mexico has been the auto industry. You know, the auto industry in Mexico at least represents between 15 to 20% of the country's GDP. So there's a lot of moves and a lot of goods going into the assembly plants or auto parts. Those auto parts are coming to the country. That was the beginning of the program, and now there are now parts that are going from Mexico back into the U.S. So auto is certainly one of those first examples. So when you're talking to companies like these that are with just-in-time kind of production schedules, and you have the intermodal working for them, that's certainly the perfect example that intermodal can work for every single industry. And right now there is no industries in the country that doesn't have any experience with intermodal. So I can give examples, for example, of the home appliance industry as well. For example, companies like Whirlpool, LG, Samsung, they are also big users of intermodal. I can say that, for example, one of them uses more than 80% of the cross-border moves by this transportation mode. Paper is another big user. You know, you need to keep your transportation costs when you're moving paper. So most of the big paper mill companies, you know, doing business in and out of Mexico, they are also using intermodal as well. But again, I think that the next frontier for intermodal growth is the FAK. Kind of freight, which is the non-auto freight. So still a lot of opportunities for the consumer good companies, and especially the retailing side of the house. So companies like Comercial Mexicana or Chedraguis or Walmart or CRs in Mexico, even Home Depot or one of those guys. Most of their supply chains are concentrated now still in Laredo. Receiving all these shipments from the different vendors, doing picking and ordering and consolidation of those SKUs or products, and then ship full truckloads into the interior of the country. So that is the logistics and the opportunity that we have as a country. Significant, intermodal rail conversions that are still out there.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think it sounds like kind of mirroring a little bit here in the United States. I mean, certainly we've seen over the past few years, you know, huge growth in intermodal, and it sounds like a similar pattern is taking place there in Mexico across a variety of industries, with significant opportunities still on the table for, you know, retail and CPG and other industries that perhaps aren't as ahead of the curve as automotive and the appliance companies and others that perhaps have been using it for longer. Carlos, kind of as a way to wrap up, since we're kind of getting short on time here, what advice would you give to, companies that are looking to leverage rail for the first time in Mexico?
Um, When you're talking to companies that are currently moving by truck, there's certainly certain steps or checklists that we want to make sure that the companies are taking care of. So basically what we're doing is not only changing the transportation mode, you're basically transforming the supply chain of the companies doing cross-border. So you are talking to, okay, my customs broker, you know, that has been clearing my loads in Laredo for forever. Well, that process now will happen in an interior ramp or an interior bonded terminal. So we need to make sure that there is a set of process in place for those type of commodities, and making sure that the importer in Mexico has a Mexican broker partner in the final destination ramp to do the final clearance. That sometimes represents a challenge for some companies because they have so integrated their processes to the customs broker piece that finding a different partner in the country can be a challenge. The good news is that most of the most important customs broker and freight forwarder companies in the border, now they also have a presence in the interior, so that continues to be a less of a challenge. So that would be one of them. The other one is the pre-setup that we need to make sure that the importer has with the railroad, because as I mentioned, all those containers are coming to the country in a bonded, pre-cleared way. We need to do some pre-setup of the importer. So there's certain documentation that we need to make sure that the railroad has prior to the first load to not have any issue with the inbound that needs to be open. And lastly, the other big topic is the blocking and bracing of the commodities. Because of the different forces in intermodal versus a truck shipment, the way that you are currently blocking by truck may work or may need to do some changes in your warehousing facility to make sure that there's no risk to the product integrity. So any space within the pallets or something that needs to be related to, you know, putting dunnage or airbags or a different layout to the cargo, that's something that we also need to do before, you know, starting loads in intermodal. So again, there's probably more steps, but I would say that those are the most relevant ones. And again, there is a methodology already in place to walk through and go hand by hand with the importer or the shipper in Mexico to alleviate all those situations and you know, start testing the service and finally try to accommodate and find what is the right spot for the intermodal conversion and the, what is the percentage for intermodal for the entire supply chain. We're not trying here to convert 100% of customer supply chain to intermodal, because we understand that there will be some lanes that probably will not work for intermodal because of transit times request or the specific commodity or some other supply chain needs. But we need to find the right spot for a customer. Is it 20%? Is it 30%? Is it 80%? Probably. Now that their supply chain can be. We need to work this together. And again, I think the advice is just to find the right partner who has the presence in Mexico, who has the experience and the relationships, not only with the railroads, but also with the Mexican trade companies. They understand what is the process and work in getting a load or out of the facility.
Yeah, no, great point there. I mean, obviously, it's a system-wide approach, right? It involves a lot of collaboration and communication between a lot of different, you know, stakeholders in that whole process. And to your point, I think one of the first steps really would be to do that kind of network analysis, or kind of look at what is the right solution for the specific supply chain and transportation requirements of the client, in terms of meeting the service level requirements as well as the cost expectations. So really doing that kind of upfront analysis makes a lot of sense as a first step, in kind of growing the intermodal presence or activities, you know, for a particular shipper. Well, Carlos, a great insight. We're kind of out of time today, and like I always say, we always manage just to scratch the surface on these topics, but I think you provided some great food for thought, some great overview in terms of what is the current state of rail and intermodal in Mexico. And certainly we didn't get any questions live today, but certainly if you're watching this episode on demand and you've got a question or a comment for Carlos, you can post a you can find this episode on talkinglogistics.com and post a question or a comment there, and I'm sure Carlos would be more than happy to respond via that medium. So again, Carlos, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Edwin. It was a pleasure.
And thank you for all of you who joined us today, and certainly look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.